Margo sort of like sussed out what was going on and like scooted right around and like grabbed onto her. She's like, I know how to get in this shot. And then she killed it when the camera actually panned down to her by grabbing the mic and singing a couple bars of Child in the Snow and announcing that she would be Tiny Tim next year.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I like it. Well, it's perfect because we're on Adventures in Artslandia, and I have several people here, some guests who will remain anonymous and others who are going to tell you who they are. Well, why don't we start with Brian Weaver over here?
Yeah, hi, I'm Brian Weaver. I'm the one of the three founders of Portland Playhouse, artistic director. I also work as a actor and director sometimes.
I'm Nikki Weaver, founder number two, you could say, at Portland Playhouse.
Don't call yourself number two.
All right, I'll say I'm
number one.
Portland Playhouse, education director, an actor in town.
And I'm Jacqueline Maddox, and I am an actor and a playwright and an Alexander teacher, and that's me.
And so much <That's> more.
And I'm Arthur Pearson, married to Jacqueline, and I'm a visual artist.
And one of the nice things about the podcast this week is we're celebrating Valentine's Day a little bit early, and we're at Hotel Deluxe having a tea party. And needless to say, there's a lot of things to talk about right now about the arts, understate. But what we want to focus on a little bit, and we can surely go anywhere we want to, talking about anything, is how it is to be married to another artist and how that works. I'm married to a chiropractic physician, who some might say are the healing arts, but it's a little different, I think, in your cases. So how has it been for you two? I mean, you founded Portland Playhouse together, and how do you balance that out? I mean, you have children, you have a big life.
Mm-hmm. I would say we fight the most when we work on projects together. but we probably communicate more when we're working on projects together. But especially since having children, I feel like it's so easy because we work, live, and breathe theater that we now I find myself, as I'm cooking dinner, asking the question, can I ask you a question about work right now? Because it's so easy to get swept into theater talk as opposed to being present with our family.
We started that after having a number of really knockdown, drag-out fights over when sort of evening conversation slowly drifts into work, and then, like, the next thing you know, we're having this heated discussion about work, and then after suffering the extreme agony of some really tragic fights, we have learned to always say, would you mind if I ask you a question about work? And then we do that, and then we go back to non-work.
It's so funny because when I think about talking at work, you know, since my husband's not in theater, I think that the parameters of work talk, like in the rehearsal room, there's some really good rules and ways that you are in the rehearsal room that seem to kind of embrace like a good conversation and an engagement.
Yeah.
But so do you have like rules in the rehearsal hall, and then do you have like a kind of another universe in like life?
Do we? I don't know.
Question.
No, it's a smart question.
I think all gloves are off at home.
Yeah.
There's no,
that's
you know,
in the
rehearsal room, there's some structure, whether it's a stage manager or sort of generally accepted, because you're often sometimes working with people who you have really long, close relationships with, but there's almost always someone in the room who's brand new, and so I think there's a It's one of the fun things about a rehearsal process is over the course of 4 or 5 weeks, you become really intimate with a group of people.
It's finite.
But
you leave the rehearsal room.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Here from 3 to 6, and then everyone goes home. But if the rehearsal room happens to be your home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go.
I wonder why I never set up my marriage like a rehearsal room. I've been safer in some cases.
Always have a mediator present.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, I talked to my stage manager about the laundry. I don't know. how's it for you guys? I mean, because you're in a different genres. So.
I think we've really learned from each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point I took drawing and oil painting for 2 years and studied it because I wanted to see if my process, my creative process as an actor and a writer was the same as Arthur's. And, it, of course, the process, I mean, we go about it very differently because it's very different things, but and also very different personalities. I think my favorite story about us when we were in New York and we hadn't been married that long, and he was being introduced to theater, and a friend of mine had written a part for me as a drunken motorcycle queen. And so I was storming around our apartment with my motorcycle jacket on and my motorcycle boots. And he said to me, you know what, Jack? You know how neurotic you get when you write? And I said, yeah. He said, you know how neurotic you are right now? I said, yeah. He said, I prefer the one where you write.
I did say that. There are occasional moments in rehearsing for the play, Playhouse Creatures right now, where you're doing a sort of Cockney accent.
Oh, yeah.
The accents can get to me. some accents I prefer more than others. And not to do anything international with the Cockney doesn't do much for
me. He's so Cockney. He's Luton.
Wherever and from ever or whatever. I think that the thing about with you two experience because you're dealing with the same project, the theater essentially. I mean, it's not if you both had different parts and were working on them quite separately in different places, you could come back and maybe. I mean, you just can't escape. You know the playhouse. You can't, no matter where you are with it. I think. The process that I sort of go with it is just you sense when the other person is really trying to resolve something creatively in a creative sense, and it's taking a lot of energy, and you have to make room for that. I can see having big arguments if you're both absorbed in the same amount of energy trying to solve it. An in-house problem.
Mm-hmm. Which administratively we work on separate levels of the playhouse, which makes sense in my brain when I think about. I think it makes us more successful because we're in different worlds, if you would say. And I would say we haven't worked on a ton of plays together, but when we do, we definitely talk about. If we're both doing this process, how are we going to do it? And more so now with kids, too. Who's going to be the parent then when we're not parenting?
Yeah.
The
children
month
are,
of
children person. Are a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Just because of the energy that the children take.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the child arrives, which you, I'm sure you found, because you had the playhouse up and running, right? And things were going on, and you sort of say, well, we've got to settle down. And all of a sudden, the child arrives. And it changes everything.
Mm-hmm. Very different from poodles.
In some regards, yes.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's a little demanding.
It's also wonderful. It's, certainly it's an insane amount of work and craziness, but it's. It's wonderful to be able to bring your kids to work. And I know both Nikki and I do it all the time, but as well as actors and designers and directors that work at the Playhouse, we have a fairly open bring your kids to school or bring your kids to work policy. It's fun seeing them run around the theater and watch rehearsals and play, you know, themselves. They sort of play out what they see and hopefully what they see in the rehearsal room is they see people being emotionally vulnerable, they see people using they see adults, you know, they see grown men and women playing with the full range of emotions, being angry and crying, and you know, so it's my hope is that it builds their emotional intelligence and just they see adults playing and being ridiculous and getting in fights and Nikki, it was like a week or two ago. Nikki and I got in a big fight, and I think I stayed in the kitchen and she walked out, and Margo was in the room, and Margo turned to me and she said, "Dad, why are you and Mom fighting?" And it seemed like it was business as usual, which is what life is. But I guess that being in so many rehearsals and performances and plays helped make that okay, or just part of life.
Right. I like that because that takes the heat off emotional experience, you know, but actually emotional experience is normal. Yeah. This is like the paint box of life. It's emotional experience. Yeah. And fighting's nothing to worry about. I guess sometimes it can be something to worry about, but...
I think everyone has their own threshold.
Right.
Some people argue in silence.
Mm-hmm.
It's deafening.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So I had someone who comes from a household where people are very verbal.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly all right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not used to that, then somebody confront that.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be in a household where there are certain looks.
Uh-huh.
The clearing of the throat.
Mm. So
the wicked glance.
The drinking of the tea.
Yeah.
Drinking
yeah.
of the tea.
No, I remember my mom very openly talking and like having a full emotional experience in front of me, and then sort of being able to name why she was having those feelings. And that it, to me, I think that built a lot of empathy, like a capacity or threshold for empathy, which is something that I hope my children, you know, now learn too, of not to normalize it, but that being a part of it hopefully allows her to have a full experience of life too.
Right, and however people play things out, it's all,
yeah.
Everyone does differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I'm not acting, I love to go back to my writing. I can't do them at the same time, two different hats. And my goal in life is to get back to my drawing and painting. But I was misbehaved with that also, because I never let Arthur alone. It was always, okay, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? How can I fix this?
It's a perfect time to take a short break
while
this giant array of food arrives.
Oh,
Lord. Oh, my.
David is going to share with us the sandwich and sweet collection, and I will hold the microphone up.
All right, so on the bottom we have all of our finger sandwiches. We have towers of finger sandwiches on the top right with the dark bread is honey ham and English mustard on rye bread. Beside that is our tomato twiddle, which is tomato and cheddar cheese on white bread. Below there is a curry chicken salad on wheat bread, and the last one is a cucumber and dill mayonnaise on white bread. On the corners, we have James Beard sandwiches. They're sweet Vidalia onions and seasoned mayonnaise rolled in parsley on white bread. The next level, we have all of our scones. We have traditional and black currant. They're an English-style scone, and I've included a couple extra for you since we had a couple of people join us. They are traditionally English-style scones for them. We have clotted cream imported from England over here, and our blackberry sage jam is made here. On the top level, we have all of our desserts. These over here, that's our toffee date pudding. Beside that is an opera cake. It's an almond sponge cake layered with a chocolate buttercream and coated in coffee syrup. These macaroons are prickly pear macaroons. And in the center, we have a lemon and berry tart.
Wow.
Right. Well,
so that's everyone.
I want you all to notice
thank
the
you.
Self,
we'll be here all night.
The self-restraint that I've shown.
The tea is so good.
You like it? Great, good to hear. Yeah, there's some delicious tea over there.
We'll have to sleep over.
All right. Well, if you need anything, let me know.
Thank you.
So everyone's enjoying tea. We're back. Mm-hmm. There's some food is being consumed at this time. So here's a Valentine's question.
Okay.
First one, if you guys go on a date, What's your favorite thing to do? Be anything. And it doesn't have to be together, like, you know, maybe you can enlighten Brian or vice versa.
Like the things that we like to do, but we don't do together. We go and soak a lot. We do a lot of nude soaking.
It's probably. I saw a picture of you guys on Facebook one time. Right?
You might have.
Nude?
No.
Do they allow that on Facebook?
I didn't mean, I meant it was a picture of, you know, just your heads. The soaking part's underwater.
The very first play poster that we did was after Ashley was the first play that Nikki and I did with Portland Playhouse. She acted in it and I directed it. And the poster image we used was a picture of us, I think from a backpacking trip where we were walking naked into a lake, and it was a picture that we had set the camera up on the shore. So it was sort of the backs of us with about knee deep into the water, and it was like foggy. There was fog all around the lake, so it was like foggy sky, mountain lake, two people holding hands walking into the lake. Do you think that's good? Do you think that's connected?
Is that a good date?
Is that part of our romance story?
Actually, I think we sent that out as our save the date, and a lot of Brian's parents were kind of horrified with receiving that image. I'll say that probably a couple years ago we made a conscious effort of not using our date nights to attend theater together. Because we spent a lot of nights where we would go out with our kids too, and we would see a show and then come right home, and we were like, wow, like we're connecting by sitting in the dark to something other than us. Which is has a lot of meaning, but I almost prefer to see theater alone than with Brian. And so now I think more when we go on dates, we love to go and soak, we go to dinner, and then we see a lot of dance too. We go to a lot of Whitebird performances, which sort of takes me other places in my mind since it feels different than theater.
Yeah, when we first got married, we had Whitebird season tickets, and then as the kids got older, Gary and I used to go, and then we'd take Kate. One of us would stay home with Olivia, and we'd switch off and take one daughter, and then the other daughter would go back and forth. I love dance too. Really.
Me too.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Jack?
What I love is going out to dinner. That's what I love. And it can be almost anywhere. But I just find that really special place for if you're in a restaurant where you don't have a lot of echoes because there's so much cement all around, but where you can have just a wonderful conversation, and just always feels very special to me.
Where was your last dinner out?
When was our last dinner out? I don't remember. We're due for one.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Maybe Valentine's.
Well, yeah, I think so.
But that should be differentiated from, like, it just being too lazy to cook.
Well, yeah, there's that.
You end up in a restaurant, that's not the same thing. Instead of experimenting with sort of trying something new.
Yeah, we like to go to Podna's and eat ribs.
Mm-hmm. That's often like, what do we do now?
Yep. Or Koji. Koji's the other one. They laugh at me because I always have the same thing. But
what's Koji?
It's a Japanese restaurant. Okay. I think there's one downtown, but there's also one out where we live. Mm.
There used to be one out by
us. We haven't always gone out on Valentine's Day, but we have almost always for our 8 years of marriage. Gone out to a nice restaurant on our anniversary, mm-hmm. and we have a thing we do. We have a book, a journal that we journal in every day on our anniversary. So we just write in it once a year, and we usually write two or three pages. We'll pass it back and forth and sort of recount some of the things from the year that we remember. And it's always fun to then that also sit and read back through other years. Our favorite restaurant for that date was Natural Selection, but it unfortunately closed this last year, so we're looking for a new. But it was,
it
was, it, Margo's trying to do with one of the one of those little finger sandwiches. Was that? But it was what it was like a slow eating, a prefix, you know, a prefix meal with wine pairings where they, you know, you eat over a 3 hour period of time and lots of long conversation. Thank as opposed to the Valentine's Day, we often have tried to make plans and then which is what I think is gonna happen this year. We made a wonderful dinner date and then Nikki got asked to do a show and so it's being cancelled via rehearsal. So I'll be having a romantic evening at home with the kids.
Awesome. So what show are you doing, speaking out?
I'm gonna do a workshop production of Anya Pearson's play Made to Dance and Burning Bridges.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Jackie, the play you're working on now.
The Testament of Mary, yes. Cara. The one woman show.
And where is that going to be?
It's on Belmont where Zoomtopia Studios used to be, but it's called something else now.
Mm-hmm. Did people want tickets for that?
They would go on the Cara website, yeah. And it's there. All the information.
Is your show public or is it?
Yeah, it's two actually workshop performances at the Playhouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. February 27th, 28th.
So
I'll put the
Portland
Playhouse website on
the podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
You guys have other stuff coming up, undoubtedly. I know
Penmanship
is running now, right?
They're in tech right now. They open
mm-hmm.
this next week.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. I can't
wait
to see that.
Me too.
I really enjoyed talking to Jesse about directing the play itself.
Well, that's right. Nothing is free. That's been a while.
Were you both on that?
No. This was like when I first came to Portland, I was recruited.
Yes. How many years did you?
2 years and off.
Which so I think a lot of service.
That's right.
Thank you,
I don't know
thank
how
you.
People do it for you years and years.
That's half. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You get a little more.
Margo, how do you think that Mom and I show our love for each other on Valentine's Day? What are you doing for Valentine's Day? Are you making some cards?
I already made Valentine cards.
Who did you make them for?
My friends at school.
That's nice. Some hearts, or what'd you make?
My mom made cards. My mom made cards and she made cards. Actually, I think she just made cards instead.
Is it fun? Is it more special to show your love for your friends on Valentine's Day than different days?
Yes.
You seem like a person who probably shows love every day.
I once found a stack of cards, which I haunted Arthur with. Each one was written in this beautiful script, little tiny cards that said, I love you. Oh. I stuck them all over the place until he was sick of love. Well, I'm not getting into that.
Sent a little one and then they said, pass this on or something like that. Whatever. It was a little...
No, it was not to be passed on.
You found one in a drawer the other day.
From someone else? Or yeah, addressed to you?
Who gave that to you? Yeah.
I found recently something that that Nikki made for me when we were first when we first met, really, when we first got together, is a little silver box. Margo and Ellie love it anytime they will can convince me to take it down off the shelf and open it up. But it's it has a little silver box. You open the lid and there are maybe 12 or 16 little tiny clear plastic containers, and each one has a treasure in it, like, and then the treasure coincides with a list of names, traits maybe that she identified with me. Is that true? I mean, this was 10 years ago, I don't know if she'd use all those same traits now. Things like
cross them out. Yeah.
Things like sweet.
You'll re-gift and, it on Valentine's. Some changes, like, some updates.
Sweet and sharp and gentle.
That's wonderful.
The
sharpest thing is a little ball that has spikes on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the spiky thing.
Why do you think Mom gave me that?
How did you guys meet?
We met. Will you tell the story, actually, Brian?
We met in a theater. Nikki was working at Shakespeare and Company in the Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires, and I was visiting a friend. And I think I arrived mid-performance. They were doing a high school Shakespeare festival, and it was mid-performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I snuck in the back of the theater and was watching it. It was one of the best high school plays I had ever seen in my life. I mean, it was so good. These kids, they were just killing it. It was imaginative and beautiful, and they were great with the text. It was, and so I was watching sort of in awe of this show, and then I noticed a cute girl standing in the back of the theater, and I thought it would be a good intro to say, what an amazing show this is. I can't believe how good it is. I wonder who directed it. And she said, I did. And boom.
The rest is history.
Then we went on a long walk around the lake, under the moon, that night.
Walked in the lake. That was it.
I don't think we took off our clothes that night.
I didn't have any more of this. Did that mean pour this in my
cup? Oh, through a painter friend, Margaret Stark, who gave a dinner so that we could... We'd met before, but she gave a dinner so that we could meet. She lied to me. She said, don't worry, he knows he's going to meet you, which was not true. And, and then she... made this beautiful dinner, and she had little place cards, and Arthur switched all the place cards around so that we would sit together, and then we proceeded to eat each other's food, and then it was an icy night in New York City, and he said, may I walk you home? And I said yes, and we walked across the village and to the White Horse Tavern, where we stayed till 4 in the morning. Just talking and talking and talking. Yeah. We kind of knew right away. I knew he wanted something, you know, to take a while, a few years. I was like, oh, I love you. And then we went to Europe together, and we came back. And in my inimitable fashion, I said, so, where do we go from here? What's what? And he got down on his knee and said, will you marry me? Yeah, it was so wonderful.
I remember that.
And that was 29 years ago.
It's so funny. 28 years ago. Just thinking about, you know, meeting your husband, meeting your partner, thinking about those wonderful moments, it really, even I think, oh my goodness, don't take for granted what we know we've had, you know, in our marriages, and our relationships, this specialness, you know, mother-daughter, husband-wife, you know. Boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. And it's so easy after a lengthy marriage or relationship to forget about just the match. Yeah. You tell the story. It's like, oh,
it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And the time goes so fast. It's crazy. I mean, I can't believe that we've been married the amount of time that we have.
How long?
28 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost 29. Mm-hmm.
When's your wedding anniversary?
May 20th.
Wow, we're almost the exact and the same amount of time married.
Oh.
We'll be 29 years married in March. Is that crazy?
It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just the oddest thing.
And it's like, very fast.
What do we have to look forward to at only 8 years in? Almost nine.
Ew.
So much. Funny. I mean, I would say so much, but it's probably the same amount of happiness that you've had. had or interesting things that have happened to you up to this point. You know, it's such a, I don't know, myriad experience.
Yeah. We share a sense of humor, so we've laughed a lot. Right? Go ahead and laugh.
Tune in.
You're cool.
You change.
Yeah.
You fall in love and commit to somebody, and then you both change.
Yeah.
Together and separately.
And you, then you, yeah, you try to change each other, usually to not much success.
I have to ask you, Nikki, because you went to Washington, D.C. for the Women's March.
Yeah.
Can you tell everybody a little bit about that?
Yeah. My friend, actually, in New York said the word. His experience was oceanic. And
yeah.
I was like, that's the perfect description of what it was, oceanic.
Fabulous.
I think, I mean, I imagined what it could be, but I wasn't mentally or sort of emotionally, I think spiritually at all prepared until I like stepped in. And I lived in D.C. for a while going to grad school, and so lots of friends there, and I marched with one of my dear friends, Ariona, who's a refugee from Albania. And I mean, it wasn't until I saw her face that I was like, this is for you. That dawning was the first like big thing that hit me. And then we left her apartment at 6 a.m. to kind of get down to the mall area around 8 in the morning. And just that was when I realized the velocity of what the experience is going to be, of just seeing hundreds and thousands of men and women sort of just slowly swarming. It felt like a swarm of bees. And we were really close to the fence, this, where the stage was with all of the speakers. And I think just the physically standing there, having space, and then sort of wondering if my feet were touching the ground at some point, feeling all of that, but then because we couldn't always see the speakers, people all around us were streaming the speakers on their Facebook live feed so that we could hear, because there was very little projection, as I heard, same thing in Portland.
Yeah, you couldn't hear.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear what anybody was saying. You were there, yes.
No, I was, it was a travel day for me, and I was watching the live feed from Washington, D.C., and I was just in tears.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I was so,
so powerful.
I was so moved by it.
Yep.
And also, what you said about your friend is so strong.
I notice that we're impacted just because, and some more than others, but I would say everyone is somewhat, just because it's the weight of it. I mean, so in a sense, there's some good because we're all, I think everyone is making conscious personal decisions to change either what, you know, either individual action or collective action that we're doing. But then there's also, it's just also true that there's, in doing things we've always done, our work, just going about our work, it can feel like a, like there's a weight around our neck, you know? So it makes doing what we do more difficult.
I find myself thinking about not only telling the stories that are important for people to share, but thinking about ways that we can create space for people to be in contact before and after and, you know, to create those kinds of community type.
Well, the thing about the march that was so exhilarating was not only the number, but the energy and then the realization that as we learn more and more about the intention of the current administration, pulling things back, the realization that we would to be more marching.
More and more.
And that it's a viable political tool.
Yeah.
So I found it quite energizing.
Me too.
And I sort of felt that all. And that sort of came up through the Vietnam.
Reminiscent.
So I found it very exciting.
How is the intern program going? I mean, how has they been Are they similarly energized because they're just a younger group of people?
Yeah, you know, I think our apprentices, many of them marched here together. And I haven't really had direct conversations with a lot of them since then. I know a few of them are sort of trying to join different groups and figuring out, yes, where to continue protesting or what they should sign up with. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I loved reading, you know, what you wrote. It just... It's really... It was... there's something about it that was very heartening, but like you said... It's very weighty right now, and it's felt like the whole month for me personally has been really difficult.
Right.
And even among the joys, you know, being together, going to see shows, being in shows, communicating with the people, artists who I feel very, there's just a heaviness right now. It's really hard to shake.
Well, and I sort of think that it's an endurance event, right? I mean, if we really are in this for 4 years, then... I keep sort of thinking about that question of what am I doing every day to sort of change tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a 5-minute action item that I'm trying to make or a 5-hour protest, that how can my voice, power, privilege, wealth be something that's motivating me to move forward? Because it's easy to feel the weight and then to sit in the weight and to do nothing too, and then to feel more helpless and hopeless.
It's a crazy dance, right?
Yeah. Because
you don't want to deny the reality of the sadness of it. It's real.
Yeah.
It's heavy. But then you don't want to.
You don't want to
get
sit
stuck
in it.
In
no.
It.
Yeah. But it's almost as though. From all directions now, there are petitions, there are speeches being made, there are articles being written. It's like...
It's overwhelming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's constant and positive. I feel like, yeah, some of it is, a lot of it is awful news, but a lot of it isn't true.
Yeah.
No. And but I feel supported. I feel a part of something.
I felt excited about the response by the ACLU to a lot of their last executive order. And
yeah.
I know that there's a plan for a benefit for the ACLU that's going to be happening in Artist Rep. Looks like February 20th, which is exciting. And,
oh, great.
You know, people are feeling all arms and... And I have to say, even we had a music event at Artist Rep during Civil War Christmas, and it was so much fun to have an event where there was community involvement, there was a performance, and there was talking during the performance,
yeah.
And just kind of being a conduit for that kind of communication between artists and civilians, you know, quote unquote, just because I've always thought that the artistic process is so... wonderful and opening,
yeah.
That we can share that ability that we have to be in contact, like you were talking about earlier, the full spectrum, help people in a way that's really special.
Yeah.
I love that so many artists are stepping out, like with the cast of Hamilton did, and Meryl Streep, and there are a lot of people speaking up who have a forum, so they use it for that. I love that, and I think that's right. I mean, I think it's what we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what makes it exciting, the play that you're working on is very controversial.
Yeah.
And especially now, probably.
Yeah, and also very much about alternative facts.
Isn't that interesting?
What's true and what isn't true, or what gets put out there by the power structure so that power can be maintained and a story that can be written that they want.
It.
Yep, that they want to have written. So it's very much about that. And not everybody will be happy with that, but it's theater.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Storytelling. Yeah. Bringing things to light that haven't been
perspective.
Brought to light.
Yep.
Yeah. It's, I mean, Hidden Figures is a great example right now of, you know, a film that's making such a splash because, you know, it's a story that, who knew that that happened? So I just think, my gosh, what a treasure trove history is. And how,
which color is your favorite?
Like, people are going to have to go back in time and re-jigger. You know, what's really, I think we're just the tip of the iceberg. It's like exploring the ocean or something. We're outer space, our history, you know. It's, we've probably got, what, 1/1000th or, I don't know, of a real story.
Right.
I feel like I need to walk around downtown. Okay, here I am. This is me. I know who I am. This is real. We're really, you know, we're sitting here around this food. We know what happened to us today. You know, it's just so surreal. And we live in this culture where we look at television and there are people that we are official news tellers. And we, I don't know who telling what.
No, I mean, lying has become the very hip thing. Just don't tell the truth.
Isn't it funny as I have to say that? I mean, because you know, our business is in a way just kind of sucking into another person's story and truth.
You're better actors than me.
Yes.
Frightful, yeah.
It's an opportunity for political, for theater to be more overtly political. It's, you know, I think a lot of artists might already think that theater is political or art is political. But I think it's, I mean, you referenced Vietnam earlier. I think they're both in opposition to the Vietnam War or during the civil rights movement, that people were trained to a much higher level of readiness for action. You know, it wasn't just like people who one day showed up to protest. It was people who like years and years of training and skill building and knowledge building around how to resist and how to be, how to practice civil disobedience and how to. So as artists, I think that we will rise to the occasion and be more overtly political and more aware of and also to provide entertainment and to provide a laughter and release and a respite and a safe place to celebrate life, both that sort of that entertainment side celebration and also affecting change.
It's so funny because some of the news is so ludicrous. I mean, it's like a Christopher Durant. I mean, you just wait. This really just happened. It feels as though it's taken the. It's notched it up.
Or you can put one in.
You know, the absurd. We're gonna have to really go crazy with this absurd thing.
It's what you were saying, Brian, when I did Noble Failure, which is about the education system, and there was a lot of, it's a political play, no, don't offend anybody, political. Now when I think back on that, it was, I thought so at the time, that it was fairly mild and explaining a situation, that it wasn't political at all, and yet in light of what's going on now, education-wise, it's the kind of play that's needed, that tells a story, entertains, and really gives you information about what may or may not be going on.
We had next season planned, almost completely planned before the election.
We have another one.
I think there's been a conversation that has been growing in momentum in the National Theater community for a while, which is the imbalance between male playwrights, male playwrights, and female or non-male playwrights. And I think it's sort of a wake-up call to theater companies that are programming next season and saying, you know, like, we've been searching for gender equity for a while, and we've, you know, maybe been making some strides toward, but in the current political climate, can you announce a season that has a majority male playwrights? I think I think it's a challenge. I think it's a challenge to all of us, individually and organizationally, to bring our personal choices and personal accountability more in line with what we say are our values.
You are so right.
Away with slow incremental change. We gotta take a leap forward just to deal with reality.
You also have to deal with the fact that you're wanting to correct a fault. You create a fault. You start. You're saying, okay, we're gonna have gender equity, and you end up choosing something. It isn't the best way. And everyone wants to say, and I did it. I thought of it yesterday, and I did it today. We elected one of the presidents. I've seen it in art shows and things like that, where people have decided to include certain types of art. And it hasn't been strong art, but it's included. So that's a political.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's something. There is a piece of truth that white men have had more privilege and opportunity in the past, and so maybe I actually don't even think it's true. But let's say maybe there are more competitive plays by white male playwrights at a certain point in time, but I don't think that it's true that that's the reason why there are more white male plays produced. I think it's because our notion of what is good or bad, our subjective notions of what is acceptable, or what we think will make money, or what we think will be the most pleasing to our audiences, what we think will be the most pleasing art, is entrenched in a racist, sexist system that is in fact not actually true. That's subjective, and it's sort of our idea of that system is ingrained. It's ingrained in all of our.
They're doing something. I mean, like having. In competitions and so on, or sex is not. They don't know the sex.
Anonymous.
Of the playwright.
Right.
Or of the painter. And I think if you make those sort of choices about how things are judged, going all the way back, people who don't get into the writing program. I mean, it goes all the way. I mean, as you were saying, it's totally ingrained in society.
When you get home,
some question about it. So it's just a matter of changing it. And I think it will equalize out pretty quickly.
And there's also ageism.
Yeah,
there's like a whole wave of old people coming. I saw this, I think it was in the New York Times. I thought, oh, well, somebody else notices this. All of the emphasis on young playwrights, grants for young playwrights. What about somebody who, at, 50 years old decides to write their first play? Why is that? Why is that not considered? That's not a young playwright, but it is a young playwright.
Right.
And so there is a lot of emphasis placed on youth, of course, also in theater. But I think that's shifting slightly. There are older parts being written, and particularly as an older actress, I really feel it. There's just not that. Not that much around. I'm curious to see what Char White comes up with, because he tends to write for older actors. What his next thing will be, because I really enjoy his work.
Me too.
White male, right?
White male, yes.
I like his plays too. His plays are beautiful, complex.
So, I love a good story, and I love a complex story, and too. Things that make me think and stay with me for days afterwards. Mm. That's rare, though. It doesn't happen all the time.
What was your most favorite, I mean, not even recent, something that you saw and didn't have to be here?
I saw an absolutely astounding production of Waiting for Godot in Galway, Ireland. It blew me away because it was so, it was physical theater, but it was so grounded in reality that, you know, one moment there'd be this pathos, the next moment there'd be this crazy hilarity, weird stuff going on, and they didn't lose me for one second. I totally believed them. I believed the whole world. And I think that's so rare to see that. And also another show there called The Wake. An actress who I found very inspiring. She was making these strange sounds, and I thought, what's going on here? And it totally, as the play went on, totally mixed with her character. She was growling. And she was just this very primitive being who had been abandoned by her community. So when I see something like that, I go, oh, yes, there we go. So, yeah.
It's kind of fun when I think about how theater brings such a beautiful breath.
Well, part of, I mean, when we moved here, part of what I loved about Portland was it felt very much like off Broadway back in the 70s. That there was this huge stew pot, and everybody was trying everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
Yeah.
And then just knowing that you have to have that kind of activity going on in order for the masterpiece to come out of it. And then it does. So I love that. I love that there's so much going on. I don't know, it seems like there's less. Now, of course, we're losing all our venues. There's no place to do theater.
I like that idea. But I think it's... I remember this term being used in terms of the expressionist painters in New York. The abstract expressionist painters in New York is like the 20s of a super saturation of artists. When there's a super saturation, all of a sudden, people worry about like, oh, there's too much, it's being diluted, or if it's not being diluted, it's actually you're achieving a critical mass, and then something great comes out.
Yeah. Well, Harold Clurman talked about that in the theater a lot. You have to keep that going.
Yeah.
It's to be a lot going on. And it does, because we work off of each other.
Right.
Like, people wouldn't let Picasso into their studios because he works so carefully off of other people. But but we do need each other
to thrive,
for things to be created. We need that, particularly theaters, collaboration. And in New York City, they put in these huge new developments on the West Side. A lot of those buildings have venues as part of them, and it's so smart.
Because
you put the space, somebody's going to do something.
Do you like that
one? Yeah. And it's exactly what we need. I mean, it's crazy what's happening here.
Since we're talking about Valentine's Day, do you think it's are there couples on date nights, or lovers going out when they're falling in love? Are they going to the theater and being excited by it, and you know, sort of falling in love is a time where your mind's exploding and you want more of life, like give me more of thinking, more of feeling, more. Is are people going to the theater, seeing plays, and then staying up all night long talking about the ideas that were?
Yeah,
that would be nice.
Is that happening in Portland right now, or there?
I don't know.
Find that person.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wonder if the apprentices
to ask,
where do you do your love thing?
Yeah.
Wait, Nikki.
Is it like walking down the street? Is it watching, you know, Netflix? What is it?
Yeah.
When Nikki and I were just the other night, had a memory and a story of when we just moved to Portland, and it was like the first couple month or so we were here. We saw, went to see a Third Rail show, Dead Funny. think that was probably their third season. Dead funny and just like just it was that experience. I mean, we loved it. We were like, oh, so excited to be in Portland to see this great theater as good as anywhere we could imagine. And we talked about it for hours afterwards. And it's I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether Portland's changed or probably we've changed. But that was. Having not really knowing anybody, moving to Portland as an exciting city to move across the country and discover an art scene.
It's interesting because I remember going to see Cider House Rules in Seattle. It was a two-part, you know, and you did the afternoon, you know, 3 hours, then dinner break, and then the evening. And they had it so you could do it one day, or you could also, you know, see it one night and then go another night. But, you know, you could get tickets. And I just remember thinking that was so much fun. Like, yeah. It was an awesome day.
A day.
Mm-hmm. Just talk, you know, because then you've got to play, and then you have dinner, and you just, okay, what's going to happen? You know, it was like Downton Abbey, but in this theater space, you know?
Yeah.
Episodic. I love it.
Me too.
The Cider House Rules, and it was like...
Because it doesn't have Gallo's on the plate up there. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the book it.
Book it did Cider House.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I can't remember the name of the play. He was fabulous in it. We did the same thing. We went in the morning. And, the Brothers K.
Oh.
And it was wonderful.
I guess to my mind, it'd be like being a subscriber.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know, subscribe to a different theater every season.
I've also found that when I see, if you go, we went to Stratford, England, and saw this barrage of Shakespeare, that I remembered it and could talk about it much more clearly. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I mean, that's the way it works, but... seeing that much and not feeling that I had to absorb anything, but I just did because I saw so much. And we went afternoon, evening.
It's kind of like what Arthur said. It's like you're just kind of, it's like the ocean.
Yeah.
Ocean.
You just, part of it.
Just letting things wash over you, and what sticks.
Yeah. Yep.
Having that, that's such a luxury to be able to see that much stuff.
Yeah.
Wow, that, okay. And also I think it's maintaining, especially when you're in the theater industry, to maintain your sense of joy about it.
Right. Mm.
That's something. Mm-hmm. You know, after you work for a certain amount of time, and of course, there, you know, there's some things called that, your personal way of being.
Yeah.
Sometimes you look at the audience, you go see a show, and you're like,
I hate theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see something like the growling actress, and you go, I'm so inspired.
Yeah.
How can I steal that?
Thank you guys so much for spending.
Oh, well, thank
time
you.
Talking and meeting and enjoying each other. It's almost every time I do it, I get heartened by the people that make theater and, you know, do so much for our community.
It's great to be here this afternoon. It's a beautiful high tea.
Yes, so fantastic. Day, you can go to Portland Playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You can go see the play.
Chapman.
You can go to Artist Rep. You can go to Fine Bird. Take a look at the Arts Landy website. There are myriad events to see. So have a wonderful Valentine's.